Peter R. Breggin, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT, and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour.
Well, my wonderful audience, this has been such an exciting few weeks. I'm so glad to have you out there to share with you. You're looking at Dr. Lee Merritt, who is going to be one of the most interesting guests we've ever had, an enormously informed, tremendously moral physician. But let me tell you first, and tell Lee about all this, we've been inundated with media. I've got like four media today, including my own TV show. And a lot of what's done it is that our book is, you know, it's a pre-publication, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, you know, that wonderful subtitle, We Are the Prey. And we've put it on pre-publication, and we've set it up so that the minute you push the button to purchase the book, which is way down in price now, you immediately in your mailbox get the most updated copy of the manuscript. I don't know any other authors that have ever done this. And it's not, this manuscript has, you know, typos in it and stuff. It's a working manuscript, but it's got 800 citations in it. It's got over 400 manuscript pages. It gives you tons of information. So people all around the world are doing that, doing their best, although we can't fill orders from around the world until later on, or when we have Amazon or somebody to do it. But we're just getting doing some TV, doing just a lot of wonderful stuff. And actually, when I invited Lee Merritt to be on, I didn't know I'd be introducing my book. At the same time, Ginger and my book. And the way you get the book, go right to the dedicated page. It's, you know, the www, usual stuff. And then it's weareThePrey.com. weareThePrey.com. It's Ginger's idea. My brilliant wife, she even spelled pray both ways to make sure that people who were, you know, we have so many Christian supporters, you know, they might just put down pray because we're all talking about praying for America right now and for liberty. Lee Merritt is somebody I've admired and wanted on the show for a long time. Many weeks ago, I read a letter by you, Lee, that was in the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. And I always like to give that place a plug because you can get this from my book manuscript too, but you can go to the AAPS and you can get a direct contact with the latest, there's a blue book there that's a guide and it's got the latest treatment people out there in the world who can really, really help you with any severe viral assault on you, and even a mild COVID-19, they can help you not get very ill, not go to the hospital, and certainly not die. But at any rate, she wrote a letter to the journal or whether it was to the website. And in it, she described looking out her window. She herself is an orthopedic surgeon, although she is treating COVID-19, and we'll talk about that. She describes looking out her window and seeing a group of children, practically toddlers, four-year-olds maybe. They're walking along in front of her office on the sidewalk. They're obviously part of a school. And instead of holding hands and bouncing along and chatting and laughing and, of course, getting instructions to, you know, to do this or that by their teachers, and they are walking along docilely in a single line, hands behind their back, heads down, face masks on, like little concentration camp inmates. like docile, beaten down people. And that, folks, is what this is all about. COVID-19 is not about a disease. COVID-19 is a real viral illness created in a lab, the Wuhan lab. My book will document that so much that you will just be enraged at all the people who are making believe that's a craziness. I actually trace the studies funded by Fauci in China, in the Wuhan Institute, making COVID viruses, making SARS-CoV viruses that look awful lot like SARS-CoV-2. So, I mean, we know, we can track the whole thing. But what this is about is making America docile. That's what this is about. It's about those little children. And making billions of dollars off of us, creating a top-down government in which we're a passive market for whatever these billionaires, these big these CEOs, these overgrown children who are these CEO of the big tech companies who are still stuck in the adolescent phase of life, which says, I want to make the world the way I want it. And they add on, and I'm a billionaire. And then the tech companies themselves and the governments and the whole medical establishment, it's all tied into this. That's what we're talking about the global predators. So Lee, I think, and I really kind of look and feel alike about this. Lee does do telemedicine, where she'll treat four viral disorders, including COVID-19. And I'm going to give a phone number. For the radio folks, I don't know if you can spin back and get this number, but you can always go to when it appears on the next day on YouTube, the show is a TV program weekly, and you can get it there and look at it. But the number is 402-660-7161. 402-660-7161. And that's Omaha and Nebraska people, folks from Omaha and Nebraska. And Lee also does work with lasers on skin issues, including, she smiled, she apparently does a lot of tattoo removal. And that's the long introduction. Lee, I'm going to sit back. Would you talk a while about yourself, about your work, about COVID-19? I just want to get to know you more and my audience to get to know you more.
Well, thanks a lot for having me on your show. I'm honored. I stumbled into this. I didn't anticipate being talking to people about viruses or being in this. I feel like I'm in a war. Yeah, this is a war, and it's a war on humanity, I think. But I didn't expect to be in this. I basically, as an elective surgeon, sat home watching this whole thing happen. And I had the opportunity to be in contact with doctors all over the world through email and all these different nice technologies. And what I realized, you know, at first when we watched this whole virus come across China, and then when I got worried is when it started killing the doctors and nurses in Lombardy, Italy, because I always tell people, if there's a time to go to ground, it's when the doctors and nurses can't save themselves. You know, not that we don't try to take care of everybody, but if you're right in the hospital and can't take care of yourself, there's a problem. But that we got that under control pretty well. And what I started noticing early on was they were just lying to us. And it wasn't just about one thing or two things. It was literally, they lied to us by omission, meaning they left out, or by commission. They told us things that weren't true, like the masks. And then they didn't tell us things which could be really useful. Like I kept wanting to kick my computer and say, for all the billions we've given the CDC over the years, why doesn't the CDC tell us the difference between this big group of people that when they get sick, they basically get well or they walk away, or the small group of people that are going down hard, going into the ICU and dying? Well, I found out that the CDC did nothing for all the billions of dollars, but fortunately the Indonesians did, and they showed in a study of over 700 people that if you have your vitamin D level above 30, your chance of going down hard with this in the hospital, even if you already got COVID and you're in the hospital, it's less than 4% chance of ICU or death. If your vitamin D level is above 30, which isn't all that high, but you need to take a supplement to get it there. That's just one example of a simple, cheap thing they could have said to us to save people's lives. the fact that they didn't tell us about that, they didn't tell us about zinc, they denied hydroxychloroquine, even though there were multiple evidences that Dr. Fauci knew about this and talked about this in the past favorably, but now suddenly couldn't say a nice word about it. I mean, on and on and on. And I have to say, when you really look at it and you say, they were wrong about everything. These are very smart, scientific people. Is this by accident? And that's when I decided, you know, we have to get, everybody has to get into this fight, because this is a takedown. This is not just about the virus. This is a bad thing that's happening. And at first I didn't have a feeling like who was doing it, who was doing what to whom, but I said, there's something we're not getting here and we're not being told the truth. So what's really happening? That's when I dug into it and started speaking out.
Well, I'm so glad you got involved, and you're doing telemedicine. Tell us about that.
Well, again, and it's funny because I have other friends that none of us are internists. We're all subspecialty surgeons or even psychiatrists. We're people that are not used to doing this kind of medicine, but out of moral compunction, we feel that we need to get involved here, because literally people can't find a doctor to treat them appropriately on an outpatient basis. And that's one of the biggest lies of this whole thing, is that there's no treatment that's effective. Yeah. You know, we if you look at hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine, they go back 70 years and more. And we've had a long time history with this. We know about this, you know, obviously in parasites. But I found out this is another thing that I discovered when I started hearing about the fact that the Chinese knew about it for treating SARS in 2004. Fauci praised this in 2015 for treating MERS. I said, wait a minute, are you telling me we've known about this? And so then I looked, this isn't something for the average person, I think, because you have to be able to really read scientific literature. When you go back and you read the science and you go to the references and you go back and back and back in time, you can find that they knew about our ability to treat viruses with things like hydroxychloroquine since the 1970s, at least. So what does that tell you? It says that for 50 years, they've known that we could treat viruses very successfully in some cases. They've had an idea, and yet they didn't teach anybody this. They didn't let any physicians know. They didn't research it. And yet every year they tell you, take your flu shot, because 60,000 people died last year of flu. We could have been treating those people, and apparently they let them die. And that's the moral quagmire that I think we're in right now, is that they've stifled the information that could save lots of lives. Here's the numbers that's really telling. In New York State, I found out, because when I looked around, when I gave a talk, this is in August of last year, and when it was, you know, in Las Vegas, I gave a talk. Anyway, in August, I looked at the actual death per capita. You know, they can massage a lot of numbers, but it's hard to look at, you know, if you look at absolute deaths, not cases, but deaths, and you look at how many people in the population that are dying. Not only do you want to know the global risk, but you want to know where's the safest and the worst places. So globally, the risk of here's your chance of survival with COVID was 99.991%. The year before, your survival rate from flu was 99.992%. So where's the pandemic and all that? But then you look at where's the worst place to be for COVID death? And the answer was New York State, the state where Andrew Cuomo was given the award by Tony Fauci for the best handling of COVID. Their death rate was 0.17%. So then I looked at, well, where's the best place to be? And you won't guess this one. Uganda. You know, we think of Idi Amin and this kind of rundown, horrible country with probably not the first class medical care. Yet they are free enough in Uganda to walk down to their corner store and buy hydroxychloroquine over the counter. As is Nigeria. I have patients from Nigeria and Senegal. They all tell me the same thing. Now, they may have made some homage to the WHO saying, yeah, we'll shut down. But they didn't shut down. All they did was walk down the corner store and buy hydroxychloroquine, and people didn't die. And so we have so much information about this. The fact that they would hide this from us for many years, the fact that you've probably unearthed in your book, which I'm looking forward to, about the setup, because it took a time to set this whole thing in motion and to get everybody poised, to get all the hospitals beholden to the NIH for funding. So everybody towed the party line and nobody squeaked. We have a whole lot of doctors that know that what they're being told is lies and they're not speaking out. To get all that in, because it's money, to get all that in place took a lot of years. And you know, I think it's horrendous what's happening, but that's how I got involved in treatment. And the treatment is really the key of treatment is if you treat people within 5 days of onset, their chance of dying is extremely small. You want to get people early. But the studies they're all doing to try and prove that hydroxychloroquine doesn't work is to start later in the course of the illness. When you're in the hospital or you're on the vent, that doesn't work that way. And then we have other drugs now, ivermectin. I mean, there's a whole protocol, and quite, if you go on, I'm trying to think of the actual website, but you can get it through the aapsonline.org. If there are any doctors out there, they want to know the treatment protocols, they've put them all under, it's a button on their site and tell
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it's right up front on the site in a blue book. You can just see it, and right. You can get it by going to aaps.com. And it's right there, and it's the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. I have that as the front piece of my book. I start the book with his. Here, stop right now. Just want you to know before you get going, you can get treatment.
Right.
And they're going to update that. And two of the three people who wrote the book wrote introductions to my book, which made me very, very proud. And you know, Dr. McCullough and Dr. Vliet, and then Zev Zelenko wrote an introduction, and Zev just got the whole thing started, that brave man learning about all this stuff. Did you work with Zev at all? Did you ever get to meet him?
No, I trained in Rochester, New York, but I think...
No, I meant during the COVID-19. None of us met each other before.
I have texted with him or emailed with him about things. Yeah, wonderful man. And, you know, it tells you something. Here's what it tells you, that for his bravery in speaking out and doing this, they tried to go after him for falsely promoting treatment. And I can't remember, but it was they tried to de-license him. Lots of bad things happened to him just for saving people's lives. You know, Dr. McCullough got censored for putting out the outpatient protocol now. And the funny thing is he got censored. I think it was by YouTube. It might have been Facebook, but I think it was YouTube. He tried to put out the outpatient protocol. And they censored him. They put out a letter saying, we're going to censor you for medical disinformation. Now, Dr. McCullough is one of the most published physicians in the world. He's like the chief of cardiology, I think, at Baylor, or senior cardiologist at the least. This is a very famous medical doctor. And they're going to censor him for medical disinformation. Come on now. You know, nightmare.
Yes. And to Baylor, it's a nightmare to have their name mentioned in association with him. So I just want to say, I'm sure he doesn't loudly announce that relationship. I mean, it's just awful, folks. And Dr. Elizabeth Leave-Leet, you know, who's got several things on my website. All these people I've interviewed on my website, you've been the missing piece. I don't know who's worth interviewing after you. But they've all been hurt. Leave-Leet, they took her off of her huge Twitter account.
Yeah.
You know, and these are all these people are, interestingly enough, deeply religious people. They're all God-fearing people who talk about it. And they're all very straight arrow people. And they're all highly trained and very intelligent physicians. And here they're being taken down by the progressive, which is identical with global, predators. And it's just a dreadful situation. Wow. Well, I just want to keep you talking, give you just a minute to rest. And before we got started, you've already told me things I didn't know. And that does not happen much on my shows. I did not know that hydroxychloroquine had been used in the very first SARS-CoV epidemic, which was 2003-2004, folks, started in China, and it only killed, I think, worldwide, it was people in the hundreds, maybe. It just didn't get very far because, in part, it was so deadly. It didn't spread. You could contain it, and it was really limited, and it didn't affect America. But so I'd love to get a reference to when we're off the air, And I'll also Google it. It may just pop up, hydroxychloroquine during this initial, the first SARS-CoV, which I'm beginning to think was also a lab release, which would mean then we have no known SARS-CoV coming out of nature into humans. It's all from labs. We've had at least four leaks of SARS-CoV viruses from Chinese labs, folks. The danger is not, as Fauci says, we got to tool up and learn to do handle SARS-CoV because it's so dangerous out of nature. No, 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 no. The danger is all the laboratory leaks coming from work that's been funded by Fauci.
Well, and I'm going to get a little timeline, and I couldn't get it published. I had been published early on in the Epoch Times, and I thought, this is a great whodunit story. Let me put it all together. And I start back in 2000 with a quote from the PNAC, the Policy for a New American Century. And my point in this whole thing is to say, before we just, you know, before we get into a war footing and we point our fingers at China, we need to point our fingers at a lot of different sources. And here's an interesting point about this outbreak. And by the way, it was not hydroxychloroquine in 2004. It was chloroquine. So the article is like SARS, or chloroquine is a potent inhibitor of SARS-CoV or SARS in vitro. That was one of the things. And I do believe they use it in some patients, but they figured it out toward the end of that outbreak. Now, SARS, as you know, that was the first one to come out. But SARS had, they found an animal, according to, if you could believe them, and it's hard to know who to believe right now. But if you believe what they said at the time, they found animal intermediates in the SARS. And it was, I believe it was the civet or something. And then it was the camel was the intermediate in MERS, the Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome. So if it turns out that the reason we know this came out of a lab was the fact that there's no animal intermediate. And there are about five kind of cardinal signs of a zoonosis or a disease in animals that jumps into another species, in this case, humans. And they're trying to tell us this was just a natural evolutionary jump of this virus. But none of those five cardinal signs are there. And here's just an easy one to understand for people, is that when viruses first cause an outbreak, a huge outbreak, that isn't the first time they came in, they crossed species. What they have to do is, and I raise chickens, so this is my analogy. It's like raccoons trying to get into your chicken coop, okay? What they do is they're very smart animals, and they kind of prod, and they pick at the wires, and they do all sorts of things, but they don't all of a sudden get in the very first time they try and take out your whole flock. What they do is they pick and they work at it for a while, and they may get one chicken, or they may do, and there's some evidence that they've been there. And then after they finally figure out how to do it right, they come in mass and they take them all. Well, that's like viruses. So when they first start going into humans, they go back and forth and they try and knock on our viral, you know, inroads, and they can't quite make it. And then by the time that we see an epidemic of some new virus taking off in humans, it came from animals, we can go back into banked blood and find evidence of all those little trials that didn't go very far. In other words, they got in enough to give people antibody response, but they didn't go anywhere else. That is not present here. And neither are the other four cardinal signs. So this one for sure did not come out evolutionarily. Anybody says that is just ignorant or lying to us. Now,
that's Fauci, and that's the CDC, and that's the FDA, and that's the whole bunch of them, the Chinese. Folks, it's the medical establishment, the scientific, all lying.
It's the medical technocrats. These are the technocrats that we've trusted thinking they were telling us the truth. Now, but if you look at this, so the real question is, we know this was developed in a lab. And we know that the Wuhan lab has lots of these things. We also know that Dr. Xi from the Wuhan lab was funded by Fauci. And not only was he funding the Wuhan lab, but when she was working in the lab in Winnipeg under Dr. Plummer, and that was in 2012. He brought some specimen over from the Middle East, from the MERS outbreak, apparently, and he brought it and started working on it. It was even before the MERS outbreak, but he started working on doing some playing around with this virus in the Winnipeg Level 4 lab. And Dr. Xi and her husband were viral researchers there. Now, under President Clinton, it was illegal for us to allow any non-allied student or doctor or researcher to come and work in any lab in America that had potential pathogens. So for example, the State University of Iowa, where they do a lot of anthrax research, you couldn't have somebody from China or Iran or any of our non-allied states. But we find out now that Dr. Fauci not only allowed Dr. Xi to come around, she was paid to come work. She was given to come work in our bioweapons lab at Fort Detrick, Maryland, USAMRIID. That's insane. We had a People's Liberation Army virologist doing research in our viral weapons lab. I think that's insane. Okay. So there's all that. Now here's an interesting thing. This is the little, when we talk about the outbreak, here's a little, oh, and by the way, it even goes farther. Let me just say one more thing before I come up to the outbreak. When Dr. Xi was working in the Winnipeg lab, some of these specimens got shipped back to China, and there was the viral research community is kind of, you know, hooked into each other. They know each other. There was a kerfuffle about this, and people started raising their, you know, flags and saying, hey, why are you letting this happen, you guys? And so I can't remember the exact year, but I think it was like 2015 or maybe it's a little later. It was before this outbreak anyway, maybe it was even 2019. Dr. Plummer, they had to do an investigation. But all that happened was the Royal Canadian Mounted Police went into the Winnipeg lab, escorted Dr. Xi and her husband out, and they went back behind the bamboo curtain. They weren't investigated. They weren't interrogated. Nothing happened to them. And Dr. Plummer, on February 4th, I'll never forget the date, of 2020, when all this was breaking out all over the world, he was asked to go down to Africa somewhere and give a lecture and miraculously dropped dead unexpectedly while he was down there. Okay. It reads like a John Le Carré novel, you know, with no trail being left uncut so nobody can follow the trail. Now, here's another point that was, I was given this tip and then I looked it up and you can do the same. It turns out on October 19th, 2019, two big things were happening and we only hear about one of them, right? Everybody here knows about Event 201. Event 201 was the so-called that was staged in New York City by the Gates Foundation, Johns Hopkins, the World Economic Forum, the usual suspects, right. and they basically talked about their novel pathogen. Their pathogen they used for this hypothetical war game, just coincidentally, was a novel coronavirus.
Yes, just right? Coincidentally.
Just coincidentally, and
this is months, just a month or two before we learn about the epidemic. Folks.
The epidemic. That's right. But what else was happening on October 19th that we never hear about? I'm going to tell you, it was the military world games, and it's like the Olympics, but for the military. And guess where it was held? Wuhan, China. And there was an article in the National File that gives some interviews with some of the people. And it turns out that some of the participants, the military participants, our guys, they went over there. There was a woman that was one of our military, and she said, the minute we got over there, we got really sick. Now, and then she got even worse when she got back. Now, okay, my ears perked up on that because let's think of the timeline here. You don't get sick the minute you're exposed. You get sick several days after you're exposed. I've never seen anybody get sick less than 3 days. Now, somebody else might have, but my experience is somewhere after 3 days and up to a couple weeks usually that you've been exposed. So these guys and the Chinese happen to say, we didn't release this. We think it came over with the military games. Now, isn't that an interesting kick in the pants? I'm just saying, I don't know, and I haven't taken it any further, but somebody ought to start looking at that. And it might be instructive. If anybody really wanted to get at the truth, it would be instructive to take our athletes and look at their antibodies. Just an antibody screen of the athletes that went over there. That might tell us something. We're a level of sleep. I'm just saying, I'm not going to point out what I can tell you. This did not come from the pangolin. And did anybody know what a pangolin was until they claimed it was from the pangolin? I just think that was a funny outbreak here. But and let me just, when you talk about who done what to what, here's an interesting thing. This was written by our guys. This was the military insiders like Wolfowitz and Dick Cheney and, you know, Chertoff and a bunch of these guys that write things for the military and do a military think tank stuff. This is from the Project for the New American Century, known as the PNAC. And it was written in 2000 by these U.S. defense insiders. And here's what it said. This is a direct quote. advanced forms of biologic warfare that can target specific genotypes may transform biologic warfare from the realm of terror to a politically useful tool. Now, I want people to think about that. Who would write that we could use bioweapons that are genetically targeted as a politically useful tool? I find that really shocking. So there are people, and I also find it shocking how many weapons researchers, bioweapons researchers there are around the world. I mean, who knew all this was going on? This is really an eye-opener, I think. And I had looked at this years ago when I was on the Navy Research Advisory Committee, and I'd looked at it when I was the chief of staff of a 250-bed hospital after 9/11, because I was really worried about smallpox. And I'd studied Russian Russian history all my life, and I knew what the Soviets had in their stockpiles of bioweapons. This isn't what I expected. This is what we're experiencing is not, I mean, smallpox, the smallpox that we have and that the Soviets have and had in Vector was 60% fatal. And my concern, and by the way, you hear Biden talk about dark winter. Dark winter was a war game that was conducted, I believe, in 2001 or 2002 by the Army. And the hypothesis was, what happens if somebody sprays some smallpox, which is a highly aerosolizable, highly transmissible, but super deadly virus, 60%, not 0.0006 or whatever this one is. So this is a bad virus. And it's the worst. We lost more people to smallpox in the 20th century than all the wars put together. Smallpox is a bad disease. And I was worried about that being used as a bioweapon, which we're not out of that woods. But the point is that we know that masks don't work for that, like they don't work for this. We know a lot of things about that. Fortunately, that isn't what this was. But what this is not a deadly virus, but it's being used as a psychological operation. And that's where my story and yours, the one that you cited. We are damaging irreversibly our children and a whole generation of people around the world that are being taught to fear things that we have treatment for. And I think that is there's the crime in a nutshell, that we are being taken down through an organized psychological operation. This is why I say this is an atypical, unrestricted, multidimensional warfare against humanity. And I think you may know about him, but Albert Biederman, after the Korean War, he was asked to look at the war veterans coming back that had been prisoners of war in North Korea. And they had been, this is where we got the term brainwashing. And he was asked to look at these people and say, you know, how could they turn against their country? What did the Chinese have, some kind of magic potion, or what happened? And he was a psychologist. He was asked to look at them. And he said, no, just standard psychologic techniques. And he created a chart of coercion. And I think people ought to look this up on the internet and read it, because you look what's happened to us. It's right down Biederman's chart of coercion. I have talks about this on my website. But the point is that the first thing you do, if you want prisoners of war to turn and be your obedient servants, right? That's what we want. So if you want to do that, the first thing you do is you isolate them. And think of the lockdown. Isolation does a couple things. One is you don't have your emotional support from the people around you, but you also don't have a source for the truth other than what I give you in isolation. And what did we give people in isolation? The mainstream media. This is the second stage, monopolization of perception. And you constantly beat on this drum. People are dying. Oh my gosh. They don't tell you in Uganda you were safe, you know, or Nigeria. They don't tell you that Taiwan avoided the problem because they are able to identify the CCP lies earlier. I can tell you how they do that. But a lot of people were solving this, but they didn't tell you that. They just kept printing up all these inflammatory news stories about children dying and everybody dying. And it made people afraid far beyond what the virus should have deserved. And then the third thing you do, and this is Fauci's secondary job. I call him the bag man because he handled the money that controlled the hospitals and people. But his secondary job was being the doctor of confusion. Because if you add confusion, and Biederman doesn't quite use that term, but there's lots of the CIA has the Kubark document talking about the Alice in Wonderland technique. There's a lot of people different names, but it's confusion. You add confusion to fear and you get anxiety. And anxiety will cause people to do almost anything to get out of that anxiety zone. And that's where we are now. People are tired of this and they're willing to take this vaccine, so-called vaccine, to get out of this anxiety zone, no matter the fact that they know nothing about it or the risks or anything. This also explains, by the way, and I have a friend who's a psychiatrist I met through the America's Frontline Doctors. He's a pediatric psychiatrist. And I had the benefit of sitting across from him at dinner one night. And I said, well, I have two questions. The first one is, if we stop this mask nonsense right now, would our children be okay? And he said, no, unfortunately, we've damaged a whole generation of children, and this may go into the next generation because they can't understand all this. There's all this inchoate fear. We're teaching children to be afraid, not to be go forth boldly into the world. But the other thing he said is that, you know, children, this is your psychosocial development is being damaged by these masks in ways that are, you know, multifactorial. But he said, just like if you put children of different heights into a swimming pool and started bringing up the water, the people that are going to drown the first are the short ones. And unfortunately, in this situation, the children that are younger, that don't come from good homes, that have, you know, emotional problems going into it or just very young, they can't be, you know, you can't explain to a three-year-old why they're needing to wear a mask, what this is all about. They're the most damaged. Now, if you're, you know, 16 years old and you're pretty well formed and you got a nice home life and you got people that can tell you some truth on the side, not so much, but it's still damaging everyone. I mean, it is. It's damaging everyone, but the children are the biggest target. But the second thing I asked him is, please tell me, explain to me who these people are wearing a mask in a car by themselves. You know, even if their masks work, that's insane. Okay, who are these people? And he said, those are Stockholm Syndrome people. They're people that they get out of the anxiety by cooperating with their captor. And so after time goes on, they not only cooperate with the captor, they overdo it. They think if they can just anticipate what the captor wants, they'll be safe. So if they tell me to wash my hands 10 times a day, I'll do it. I'll 20 times. And then, you know, wear a mask, I'll wear six masks, and I'll stand 27 feet from people. It's that kind of nonsense. But it's dangerous nonsense because this is a psychological operation. And ultimately, my belief after looking at all this is, they really, you know, we can argue who they are and who's running this show and what's the, but they, the motive seems to be they really, 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 really don't want us to have treatment. They really, 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 really want you to have this vaccine right away. They don't want you to wait on this vaccine. Don't hesitate. Just jump right in line. So that's, I mean, I think that's the and I have lots of things in my timeline. I'll send you a copy, but that's really, I think in a nutshell, this has been planned for a long time. And I was pleased, by the way, Michael Yaden, you probably know, I don't know if he's been on your show, but he first popped up about, I want to say May of last year. He was the senior scientist for Pfizer.
Oh yeah. Research. No, I haven't had, I've heard a lot about him, but I have not been able to contact him. Maybe you could help me get in touch with him.
Right. So he popped up and he started talking about the PCR tests. And he pointed out that probably by the summer of last year that they were 90% false positive. And he talked about cycle amplification, all the things that we knew, but he had, you know, the imprimatur of, you know, research expertise. He knew Kerry Mullins, he knew about this stuff. And he said, this is nonsense, but he never took it the next step. You know, this is the problem. Good people don't think other good people, well, you're a psychiatrist, I shouldn't be telling you about psychopathology, but basically we don't understand what's happening because we're not psychopaths. We think everybody has the same moral, right, you know, effects on our behavior that we do. And so when you look at the world that way, you just look at what's happening. You say, how can they be wrong about all this? Well, finally, Dr. Yaden, God love him, has just popped up and said, they're trying to kill us, and that they could kill billions of people with this technology. Let's wake up here. So I give him a lot of kudos for getting some. He was brave to start even talking about PCR, given his status, but he's even braver to say this because, and by the way, I'm not suicidal. Jeffrey Epstein didn't commit suicide, and I'm not suicidal either. So make sure you get somebody to investigate if something happens to me, because it is somewhat dangerous to talk against pharmaceutical programs. I tell you, historically. But yeah, Michael Yaden has hit it, and I think it's hard to get around the idea that we are being actually attacked, and when I say it's. When we talk about unrestricted warfare, it just means there's no set battlefield. In this case, a set battlefield could be the battlefield's partly your brain and your child's crib and your backyard. And it's multidimensional because we're being attacked. Not just this virus is part of a multidimensional attack, economic, cybersecurity, social, all sorts of different ways that we're being attacked in our society today. And this is like one of the things that puts it all together.
For folks who haven't heard about it before, the unrestricted warfare we talk about in a couple of our shows is a Chinese concept, and it comes from a book actually published by two Chinese military officers, and it basically says that everything goes to reach your goal. The measure is, will it get us to the goal? And better yet, if you don't fire a shot.
Right.
And a lot of this, which I did not want to admit, I struggled with it. A lot of it, as I track in the book, in COVID-19 and the global predators, it comes out of communist China. It's amazing to see the degree to which people like Bill Gates and Schwab and the top 5 or 10 tech companies and so on and on, Michael Bloomberg, they're all in tight with the Chinese communists. Now they say with China, but it's the Chinese communists. When you do business with China, you're doing business with the Chinese communists. There is a complete fusion between all things that go on in China and the military and the People's Liberation Army and so on. Dr. Lee Merritt, I want to ask you, I'll first tell you, I'm learning more new things from you than anyone I've had on the show since maybe the early days. You have a huge wealth of knowledge. You know the names, you know dates, you know a lot of stuff. And it all fits, fortunately, into the whole scenario of my book, thank goodness. It's not distorting the book in any way, but it's just filling it out more deeply. It's like this should get appended to the book. How did you get into this? You know all these people. You're a surgeon, for God's sakes, an orthopedic surgeon. How did you become one of the most knowledgeable people in the world about the background of COVID-19?
Well, you know, I was in the military for 9 years, and I was married to a senior Marine officer for 30, and I think it kind of rubbed off. I just, you know, part of this is just being suspicious and also knowing like, the thing about you just said about China, I mean, I remember 30 years ago reading in something at home that we had about the Chinese generals talking about being in war with America in 30 years. So I've been paying attention to certain other things for a long time. When you're unemployed, you got a lot of time to read. I guess that's the other point here. And I kind of think of myself like the Rain Man. I remember lots of the grisly details. I got it somewhat up here, but I don't know. I just... part of this is scratching your brain. It's a real sleuth and scientific, interesting thing. Like I've been looking recently at the vaccine, at the VAERS vaccine adverse reporting system. And there's a lot of fascinating, just on a scientific point, things going on. If it weren't so tragic, it would just be an interesting scientific dive. But, I guess that's my excuse. I didn't expect to be here, but now I feel like the other thing I will say is when I was in the military, I just missed the Gulf War. I had my sea bags packed and my dog tags on and the whole bit. And then at the last minute, they didn't have enough orthopedic casualties to need me. So I say to people, this is my war and I'm in it, because I think they're coming after us. They're coming after our children. I believe that.
It's absolutely clear to me too.
And I will say, the one thing I would say, maybe a little different take on what you've said, is the Chinese are involved, but I honestly believe they are just the action arm of the people who are really in charge of this. And I think it's an interesting point. I read an article from, it's an economic article, and it was a study done by a guy named Gladfelter. And he was in 2011, they did a study in Switzerland, and they looked at the 37 plus million companies in the world, corporations, registered corporations. And they looked at, and I'm sure they didn't look at like tiny little ones, but they looked at the big corporations. And then they put them into a supercomputer to see if they could see commonalities. In other words, how many real corporations are there that are owned by other corporations when you narrow it down? And surprisingly, they got it down to 147 companies own all the corporations in the world. Well, then Forbes took that list And they looked at those 147 and they determined they were actually owned by 10 banking houses. And then another independent researcher whose name escapes me right now looked at those and he said, if you really understand the funds, big fund managers, those 10 banks are actually owned by four big funds. And if you look at who runs those big funds, it's 150 men in the world, roughly 150. No women need apply. So you have the situation right now where 150 men in the world control 60 to 70% of the corporate wealth of the world. And if you don't think you can do good or bad with that, and you don't think that that can be a conspiracy because it's only 150 people can know each other and talk to each other, I think that's very probable that somewhere in this show, those 150 are involved because this has taken a lot of money and a lot of planning. And the other thing against it being communist China as the driving force is that if you look at the billionaires and trillionaires club in the world, they've been talking about these things before there was a communist China. You know, they've become funded. It's who funds communist China? Well, who got it started? Who did all these things? Who funded the Soviets? You know, our banking houses. So I have to say, I think there's a big money component above the communist Chinese. And I do like what David Icke said at I love the Europeans are standing up and they're protesting. And there was a protest in Trafalgar Square and he was speaking. And at the end he said, you know, there are maybe a room full of people, a handful of people in the world running this show, and they could fit into one room with room left over. He said, there are 7.8 billion of us. I think I see a way out of it. And I do see, I think ultimately that's what this is about. We have a super class, an uber class, the uber lords. I can't name them. I have some suspicions, but you don't know for sure. And then you have all of us. And we are being treated like cattle. I mean, think of what you do for cattle. I come from farm country. I mean, my farmer, we have cattle. What do? We feed them what we want them to have fed. We give them chemicals. We don't really care if it, you know, I mean, not our cows. We don't chemically do that. But they're feedlots that they don't really care. They're just trying to make money on the cows. So they feed them stuff that may not be perfect. And then when there are too many of them, they get rid of the extra cattle. They tag them. They want to know where they are. They tag them so that they have ownership, and they vaccinate them. It sounds a lot like what's happening to us. I would opine that we are a surf class, and we're starting to rebel, and that's kind of uncomfortable for whoever's running this show.
Have you talked with Catherine Fitz about any of this stuff? Because she has tried to engage me more about the banks and the financing.
I haven't, but I've heard what she had to say. And my ears perked up when she started talking about what is being burned down in these BLM riots and Antifa rallies.
Yes, right? Yeah.
And she's knowledgeable. In other words, I mean, I could be wrong about some things, but I do have the ability to read science papers and make some sense of it. She is a smart person who has the ability to understand, you know, she was at HUD, I think. She understands. Yes. And these financial things that I don't understand. And when she says this, I think it makes sense that she said when she looked at those burn patterns, they look more like acquisition of properties in these opportunity zones.
Yes, she said that to me too. Yes.
Thing. See, again, multidimensional warfare. And that's not being done by the communist Chinese unless they're coming over and funding our people in the streets, which I don't think so. But I do think it's a global effort. I don't think there's any one country or any one person you can identify. I don't think this is Blofeld or something. I think this is a group of somebody. And how well it's organized, I don't know, but probably pretty well organized.
This is so, so interesting. You're definitely taking things beyond where I've been able to go. My own thinking was that, you know, we have these billionaires and we have these big companies, and that's the group. I don't know about the super group you're talking about, and that they have been working with the Chinese and getting wealthy working with the Chinese. The Chinese have been getting super wealthy during COVID-19. They're billionaires. They have 400 billionaires there, and they've gone up 60% average. That's average of all of them. Our top 15 have gone up 50%. Their whole bunch has gone up 60%. And I figure that the billionaires are being naive that China will just eat them alive, and it's a Chinese empire we're looking at. But you're thinking there's somebody maybe pulling, you are saying, you believe there's people pulling their strings as well. It's very, very interesting.
I can tell you that there's a, I mean, we could argue that this is just about money, but I don't think that explains the whole
thing. No, it's power. I think
it's not just about money. It's power and probably depopulation of some sort. And I say that because, you know, when you think about it just being money, and that's what I thought it was. I thought this was just the pharmaceutical companies were going to make money because.
Right. I totally agree with you.
You know, that's how I started. This has been an evolution of thinking on my part. And if I sound a little crazy, I'm just going to remind people that there's a famous quote by Friedrich Nietzsche that said, "Those who are dancing are thought to be insane by those who cannot hear the music." You know, if I'd said some of the things I just said to you and I'd heard those 2 years ago, I would have said, "Oh, that's
yes.
just.
Yes. Oh, no. Yeah. Yeah. But, oh, it's a new world."
Right. Events have proven things to be not the world I thought it was. And a couple in 2000, when was the swine flu? I think that was like 2009. But, you know, the swine flu was a debacle. And a few years, here's what happened. The EMA, which is like the equivalent of the European FDA, a couple years before the so-called swine flu epidemic, they changed the definition of a pandemic. And they made it a pandemic used to have some qualities that it had to be worldwide, but it also had to be fairly murderous in the sense right. that it killed people in multiple ways, right? But they changed the definition of a pandemic to simply a global disease. Technically, rhinovirus could be a pandemic, the common cold, because it sweeps, a new variant sweeps across the world, that's a pandemic. And the benefit of what happened there was the EMA is funded by the pharmaceutical companies, just like our FDA is. People that think our FDA is the checkdog on pharmaceutical companies should rethink their position, because the way it works is the big pharma does the studies on its own stuff. It submits those studies to the FDA and the EMA, and then it funds them to look at the studies. Now, can anybody see anything wrong with that?
Well, and then all the executives at the FDA can't wait to double dip after they retire by going right. to work for the pharmaceutical industry.
70% revolving door that was studied. So yeah, so basically we used to call that bribery. If you diss a bunch of their drugs, you're probably not going to get that funding. So that's a problem.
Once they arrange to get the funding through the congressional legislation here in the US, the turndown rate became minuscule.
Yeah,
because
right.
the companies were funding themselves. I mean, they went to very few people being rejected to quite a number beforehand.
So anyway.
But it is power. I agree with you. And see, that's where I think the Chinese communists come in, because they want to build an empire. They have two motivations, the Chinese history of empire and the Marxist idea of taking over the world. And I think the Chinese are in it for much more than the money. They're in it for power and glory and China and Marxism. And we don't have any contrasting system of motivation once the Judeo-Christian tradition of America, our great sense of being special and for freedom and God, once that's gone, we have nothing to confront that with. So.
Right. But there are other people that want power. That would be my point. But
yes.
But my point about the EMA is that when they changed the definition of a pandemic, so first they changed the definition, and then they had these models. The same guy that did the models of this outbreak did the models of the pandemic, the so-called swine flu pandemic in 2008 or 2009. And then they said, oh my gosh, it's going to be a horrible pandemic. We've declared the pandemic. So then the pharmaceutical companies step in and they get nation states to buy antivirals and vaccines. All these countries, I mean, this put $9 billion back in those days into the pockets of the pharmaceutical companies, boom. And then what happened is the disease fizzled out, turned out not to be much of a pandemic at all. And they were stuck having given a bunch of people these vaccines and antivirals. And one of the things that caused worldwide, and specifically in Europe, they had over 700 children that developed serious narcolepsy, meaning not able to stay awake, and a lifelong disability from that. So then the very countries that went into debt to buy these pharmaceuticals now had to also pay to have them destroyed. The taxpayer got hit twice for this, is what I'm saying. So that was, but who walked away from that? The taxpayer lost, the countries lost, you know, but who walked away from it positive? The pharmaceutical company. So it's easy to say this is all about big pharma making money. But a friend of mine who's not a physician made this very, I thought, cogent observation. He asked me, he said, because he thought it was all about money. He said, but you know what? If it's all about money and these vaccines don't work very well and they're taking a risk and they're putting a lot of money into what's in there, why not just make a full vaccine that's, you know, like a placebo type vaccine that looks good, but doesn't really do very much. And it would do, because these things don't prevent transmission. So why not make something that's cheaper for them to make more money? They could still convince the world to get vaccinated, it looks like. And I thought about that. And I said, that is a very good point. If this were all about money, there would have been a way to make more money, which makes me think this is not all about money. That's
no, definitely not. A lot of the people I'm talking with now are talking about evil. The Christians are talking very definitely, many of them, about this being the devil work, the work of evil. I certainly think it is the expression of human evil. And money is power, is glory. And in the book, I never focus on, I make the same points you are. It's wealth, it's power, and it's glory, or some way of looking and dividing all that up. And that's why it isn't a question of whether Fauci's making a lot on the side in addition to his almost $500,000 salary. His wealth and control and power of the Institute and his working with Bill Gates and being on his vaccine committee and really affecting the whole world is, you know, that's a big payoff. I mean, Hitler wasn't trying to get rich.
Yeah. And there's a good picture again, I think this is a National File photo, and it shows Bill Gates and Fauci's boss, whose name I'm blanking on right now, who's the director of the NIH. And Francis Collins, thank you. And he's a geneticist. And I think this picture tells you a lot. Dr. Collins and Bill Gates are sitting literally shoulder to shoulder, touching, and they have these dead eye expressions on their face looking out at the camera. And then Fauci, who has a boredom, is sitting a chair or two away with his hand in his head is in his hand. And my caption on this is, you know, him thinking, now what are they going to tell me to do next? It really gives you the impression that you've got Fauci's the like I say, the bag man. He has orders to follow. He has things to do. And he's, you know, like he was told to tell all these things, I'm sure, about the mask, because he started out saying the right thing. Masks are not for everybody.
I don't think he's a bag man for people like Collins. No, I think Fauci he's directly connected to Bill Gates.
Right. But see, Bill Gates doesn't do it directly through Fauci. He does it through the NIH. And my point is, you got a geneticist now as the head of the NIH, and you've got Fauci getting money directed that he can direct. Fauci directs the money, but it's not his money. It's not just Gates' money, because the Rockefeller Foundation, these other foundations are funneling money into Gates Foundation to funnel it to the NIH.
Lee, we have to finish up. This is Dr. Lee Merritt. We are going to run over time in about 10 seconds. I have been more stimulated to think on another level. I've gotten more new information from talking with you than from any of the, you know, great interviews we've had, because you come in with this very unique and fresh and highly informed approach. Thank you. We'll talk afterward, and I want to get your chronology to make sure I have the most important information in the book. Thank you for...